this week's episode, I have a beautiful discussion with Lisa Baim, who is a mental health coach who helps mothers who have lost their children. I hope you gain some insight from today's episode, and thank you for listening. So I have a special guest here, Lisa Baim. Thank you, Lisa, for having the time to be here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And Lisa is the host of Rising Strong, Mental Health and Resilience. And from my understanding, Lisa, you are also a grief mentor to mothers who have also lost their children.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So before we get into a really important but deep discussion, why have you chosen to host a podcast about the overall mental health realm and not the focusing of just grief?
That's an excellent question. And in my first episode, I actually talk about that. You know, I really think that mental health and grief are very interconnected. And I've been on my grief journey now for 8 years. I also have a 23-year history of mental health struggles and, you know, hid a lot of that, really became a master at wearing the mask even before our daughter died. And since our daughter died, my son is struggling with mental health. I have coworkers struggling. I have, quote unquote, accepted that mental health is just going to be a part of my, you know, my lifelong journey. It's my constant companion. But I think that, unfortunately, grief is one of those icky words and icky topics that as soon as you say the G word, you know, people's eyes get wide and they get that fear in their eyes, like they might catch your grief, or, you know, we're going to talk about something just so horrific that they don't even want to be a part of it. Whereas mental health, I feel like we are getting better. We've got a long way to go, but I feel like people are more open to the mental health discussion. And I feel like in that wheelhouse, I can perhaps reach more people, and that I do actually talk about grief a fair bit on my podcast as well.
Yeah, I think nowadays everyone is open to their mental health or like their spirituality, like you mentioned. And I think they're more welcoming to the idea, to the overall, you know, concept of bettering our health when using those terms instead of like, oh, suicide or grief or, you know, something so specific. Maybe we can help or mention the discussion in the broad.
I was just going to say, you know, in my own experience, grief is something we don't want to learn about. And the worst time to learn about anything is when we're in the weeds. You know, I have a healthcare background. I've worked in cancer care for 33 years. And, you know, I work with a lot of patients who are palliative, who, you know, we're giving comfort measures to because they are at end of life. And I go to a lot of conferences where we learn about end of life. And, you know, this is just the wheelhouse that I work in. And I thought I knew something about grief. When in fact, I, you know, when I reflect back, I have half a page of notes from my course, half a page. And even my husband, who's a pharmacist and works in the cancer clinic as well, he said they didn't learn anything about grief. I've done tons of presentations in various health districts to nurses and various healthcare professionals that work with people in end of life. And they say, as healthcare professionals, we don't have the training. And it's actually frightening. I learned 99.999% of grief from my own experience. And I think it's such a shame that that is the point when people are learning about grief, because we don't want to learn about grief. We don't want to talk about it. Like when things are going well and, you know, why would people want to learn about grief? It's not a fun topic to talk about, but then you know, the sad reality is that 100% of us are going to die. You know, nobody's getting out of here alive. And not only does that make our lives, you know, of a determined length, we're not going to be here forever, but that means that our loved ones, our coworkers, our friends, our neighbors, like everyone around us, unfortunately, at some point, their life will end. So grief is inevitable. You know, it's one of those guarantees in life. You know, death and taxes are the two things that are guarantees, unfortunately. So after my daughter died, now that was 8 years ago, resources have changed. Things I would say are better. But at that point in time, it was heartbreaking just for the lack of resources out there. And not just the lack of resources. There were books, there were a few things here and there, but anything that gave people hope. You know, I remember friends, again, you know, loved ones in my life telling me to my face that my marriage was going to be over. Telling me that my son was going to have a life of mental health and drug issues. You know, telling me that I would never laugh again. And I was horrified. To this day, I call it the swirling black vortex. And even I went to some support groups. And I was horrified when I met other grieving moms who had been on this journey for 15 or more years, and they truly believed that life was over and, you know, it was bleak and black and all this stuff. And I said to my husband, I can't live like this. Katie, my daughter, does not want me to live like this. So I started, and actually, truthfully, I hid my truth. I had one or two select people that I could speak my truth to. And my truth was, grief sucks. I hate it. I would sell my soul to the devil to have my daughter back for a minute. But I truly believe that life can be good again. Will it ever be great? Will it ever be as wonderful as it once was? Not a chance. But it can be good. But with any kind of change, we have to do some work along the way too. You know, nobody's going to show up with their magic wand and make things better. That we have to do some of that work.
Thank you for sharing that part with losing your daughter. During that time and maybe till now, what coping mechanisms have you found that were helpful during that time, and maybe even some practices now? Are there specific practices that provided comfort or solace then and now, and has it changed?
That's a loaded question because, number one, I think it's really important to point out that grief is a lifetime journey. Like it doesn't go away. You know, my grief is always right in front of me, you know, and I've learned to build my life around my grief. So I carry it with me, and I've learned how to carry it with me. I remember at the very, very beginning, people would say, "Oh, you're so strong." And it would make me so mad because I felt like shouting, "I have no choice. Nobody gave me a choice." Like, you know, like essentially the police officer showed up at my house, gave me this horrific news, and I've had to figure out how to carry it. What has helped me? Again, I think it's really important for listeners to know that grief is so unique to each person. You know, I work with grieving mothers. I have worked with hundreds of them over the years, and I have not met two the same. And of course, there's different ways that people grieve. There's just, because we're different humans, we come to our grief with the different life experiences, different traumas, different upbringings, different cultural backgrounds. And we're complicated animals. Like, as humans, we're complicated to begin with. And then you throw this extra layer of grief on there. And like I said, nobody teaches us how to deal with this. You know, my parents growing up never said, "Well, this is what you say when someone is grieving," or "This is how you handle it." So I think we're all unique, and what works for one person may not work for another, but What I have found over 8 years, I call it my grief tool belt. There is not one single tool that I rely on over and over and over again. And my belt, when I'm having an okay time or I'm in a fairly good space, I try to learn something new because I know that the waves of grief will always come back. So the more that I can build up my tool belt, the better off I am. For a while, it was grief yoga. Grief yoga was a go-to for me for a long time, and it worked until it didn't. I still will rely on it from time to time, but it's not my go-to. And then journaling was huge. I really like journaling kind of at that, not quite at the very, very beginning, but you know, a couple months, 2 months to about the first year, because I had a lot of anger. And I found that, you know, there were a couple of occasions when I let my anger out and I felt horrible after. We can't take our words back. So I found that journaling was a safe place for me to share my thoughts. I could yell, I could scream at the paper, if you will. I could swear, I could, you know, get out all of that toxic stuff in a way that felt good for me, as if I said it out loud, but in a safe way that no one's feelings would ever be hurt. I worked through a lot of really ugly stuff when I was journaling, so that was really helpful. Prior to losing my daughter, Katie, I actually worked as a health and wellness coach. And I helped, you know, super busy professional women carve out time so that they could have some healthier practices in their life. So off the hop, I think I lasted 8 days without exercising. Prior to that, I had, you know, been a daily avid. I lifted weights. I, you know, went to spin class and yoga and did all the things. And I remember day eight, just sitting on the couch, you know, the funeral wasn't quite there, but I just, you know, kind of in that just foggy, all of those horrible things, and just sitting there and feeling horrible because I hadn't physically done anything and hadn't slept. And I mean, just physically a mess. And it was almost like I could hear Katie's voice in my head. Go downstairs, Mom. Go do some exercise. Over the years, my husband and I have built up, I wouldn't formally call it a gym, but it's a workout space. You know, we've got some weights, we've got some mats, we've got, you know, various things. Go downstairs, Mom. And I did. I pulled on my exercise stuff. And I mean, it was probably a pretty pathetic workout. But I went downstairs and I moved my body and I stretched and I did some of the things that I always did before. That helped immensely. I'm not a runner. I'm a plodder on a good day. I plod along, but I would run on our treadmill until I couldn't run anymore. And even though my knees were screaming at me and physically, you know, it was a really hard thing to do, the endorphins and all of that helped my mental health immensely. Because when you're grieving like that, if you have the hope or the feeling that I can maybe do this for another day, that's all you need, right? That's all you need. And again, you know, going back to my fitness and wellness, I knew that drinking water was really important. I knew that, you know, dehydration can actually make you feel depressed, even on a good day. Eating well, fueling my body, those things were so, so critical. So that was the beginning. And then I realized how important other people were. Finding other grieving moms like myself that I could talk to, that I could, you know, ask questions like, am I normal? You know, is this feeling normal? That was a huge, huge piece. And I feel so bad for people who haven't found the strength to reach out to other people, because it really does make a difference.
Yeah, I think being able to even understand what you're feeling, or having language to even express even the remote feelings or sensations in your body or your emotions, is really important. If, can I share like a little like story a little bit?
Please do, yes.
So when you mentioned when about the grief to other people and they didn't want to hear it, it's not like 100% related, but when my mom passed away, I was turning 5. And her family is still around, her brothers and sisters. And so when I'm introduced to other people I don't know, I'm always introduced as, oh yeah, this is Felicia, her mother died, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm over 30 and I'm still being introduced as that. It's like a label. It's just like, it's kind of like similar to grief, like people don't want to talk about it, but then it's like this thing that's other people identify me as, not related, but kind of sort of in the realm. So I kind of get where you're coming from, and it is so annoying. And like you said, people don't really know how to even ask the right questions, maybe, or appropriate questions. I don't know how to maybe, instead of saying like, how are you? I think there's, or maybe it should be talked about, like more dialogue, more discourse around how we can sort of relate to each other when we're going through this time. Let's say even if to a 5-year-old or 30-year-old and so on, I didn't have the language growing up. And like you said, culturally, like I grew up in a Filipino culture. And so back then, and even now, it's getting better, but they didn't talk about mental health. And so we didn't believe, or my family didn't believe in going to mental health professionals when I was a child. I was the quiet, reserved one, and my sister was the extrovert, and she handled it differently. And I was, for a long time, the one with the attitude, the one with the behavioral, you know, I didn't like to, you know, but it's all rooted in deeper issues. It's just people don't want to dig deep. And when children are like sort of acting up in that way. But yeah, so going back, I kind of sort of relate to your story, but mine is like the opposite end. But yeah, and growing up, when I turned 30, I realized something was not right, because I had waves of emotion, and I knew my best friend is still my best friend. She's a therapist, and I talked to her about it, and so I did reach out for help with her assistance. So it's like a lifelong task, like you mentioned, and it'll always be there with you. And I think we just learn sort of to navigate life with it. We're not always sad, but it does come up unexpectedly when we're just sort of going about our way. I just appreciate you discussing your point of view as someone who lost their child and how your adult life changed since.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and you can probably speak to this as well, but I feel like when you lose a significant person in your life, it affects every aspect of your life, right? It's not just the loss of the physical person. Your future has changed. The future that you thought you would have, you got married, you had a child without your mom. You know, I will never be the mother of the bride. I will never, you know, my daughter didn't get to graduate grade 12. She had just received an entrance scholarship into the faculty of nursing. She never got to be a nurse. She, you know, had her first love, but, you know, I will never see her get married or have a family. My identity has changed, and that might sound perhaps selfish to some of the listeners, but, you know, I was always the mother of two. I always had a daughter. I always had a son. We were a family of four. Now there's an empty chair at my kitchen table. You know, for years, if we went to a restaurant, you know, the hostess comes around and, you know, for how many? I would say four. without even thinking about it. You know, my sense of safety in the world has changed because my daughter was killed in a car accident. You know, it was nobody's fault. I can't blame it on drugs. I can't blame it on alcohol. I can't blame it on texting. It was an accident, you know, and she left the house on a regular Tuesday night to run an errand, you know, so you just realize how quickly and easily bad things can happen. So, you know, I know now that when people leave the door, leave my house, I may never see them again. And that's a terrible place, you know, mindset to live in. But when you lose someone you love, it affects so much and it just ripples. It ripples into your work. It ripples into your personal life and all kinds of things. So it's, you know, when you mentioned we don't know what to say to each other, I think that that is a huge thing. I did write a book about child loss and I dedicated an entire chapter for the supporters, for our loved ones who may not know what to do, may not know what to say. And I feel like one day I might take that chapter and build it out more and create an actual resource book for that, you know, can be given out, you know, at funeral homes or in doctor's offices or wherever, because we are just terrible. You know, like you say, even that simple question, how are you? I remember I just wanted to shout back at people, well, how do you think I am? You know, and yet when I work with grieving moms, I remind them, I said, I think this is just part of our English language. Like, to me, if somebody passes me on the street and says, hey, how are you? And they keep walking because they're walking their dog. It's just like, how are you? In our English language, I think is just an extension of hello, really. And we need to just kind of let go of that anger. But when I speak to someone who's grieving, I have started saying, oh, hi, it's so good to see you. Right. And I just feel like when I look at them, like it just kind of, their shoulders drop because they've dodged that really hard question. Because if grieving people answer that question honestly, there might be a lot of messy tears. And maybe that person doesn't want to have that moment at that point. You know, if you run into a grieving person in the grocery store, odds are they probably don't want to fall apart in the grocery store. But if they're honest and they say, you know, I'm grieving, my mother, my father, my child, my husband, wife just died, you know, the reality is it's going to be ugly, right? But I do think that there are things that we can say to those that are grieving. Like I said, I've been thinking of you. So good to see you. You know, and there's always that time and space to say, and I will always add the disclaimer, you know this is a really stupid question, but I really want to know, I'm really concerned about you. How are you coping? How are you managing? But I think an important thing for everybody to remember, like I said, we're all unique snowflakes. We all deal with things differently. We're just different people. But I think across the board, people like to talk about their loved ones. You know, I said a moment ago that I will mistakenly say we need a table for four at a restaurant. And yet, when people ask me how many kids I have, I will always say two. I once said I only had one and I felt sick to my stomach. You know, I gave birth to Katie. She lived 17 and a half years with us. I will always be her mom. That is the fact. I will always be her mom. So I will always say I have two children. But I think people think that by talking about our loved one, asking, you know, tell me about your mom. You know, what's your favorite memory of your mom? People think that they're going to make us cry. Like they're reminding us that our person died. We're never going to forget they died. You know, and you can't make me cry. If I cry, sometimes those are tears of joy. Like, I'm so thankful that you asked me about my daughter. Or I love to talk about her. One of the greatest gifts that I got after she passed away were her friends or, you know, places she'd been said, hey, Have you seen this photo before? I had this photo of Katie on my phone and they would forward it. And it was just so nice to see these new pictures. Because as somebody who's lost a loved one, you don't get new pictures, right? All the pictures I have that I share that I have now are all old, you know? But I think as much as we can, I know it's impossible to really know what someone is feeling when you haven't gone through that exact thing. But, you know, think about the person that you adore and love the most in this life. Might be your kids, might be your husband, your partner, whomever. And imagine if something happened to them. Would it be hurtful if people just didn't acknowledge them anymore? Didn't talk about them? Didn't say, you know, if it was your husband, oh gosh, you know, he was such a great golf partner. You know, I remember this funny time we were out golfing and, or, you know, it just doesn't feel good as the grieving person to have your loved one kind of ignored. Like almost, because when people ignore them, it's almost like they ignore the fact that they existed at all.
Yeah. I was going to, when you said, when people don't know what to say, and that the how are you is an extension of just a hello. I think that happens every day without us even knowing it. Like, let's say we haven't seen someone in a long time and, you know, and we don't know what's going on in their life. And for me, I've made this mistake quite a few times. Before, I always said like, oh, are you married now? Do you have kids? You know, that was just kind of like the small talk thing that I knew then, but sometimes that also could be inappropriate or, you know, not the nice thing to say maybe. And we just don't know as a culture to say the alternative. Like, I like how you said, oh, it's nice to see you. And then maybe like, what has been going on in your life? Or,
yeah,
you know, something more, not so specific, at least at first, to really understand what has been maybe going on in this person's life. And, you know, sometimes we do it so casually, we just don't even, we're not even conscious of it. But I think I just like your point about being more aware and maybe not saying how are you, and maybe have another way of saying hi and without asking a question. Because I know some people, you know, especially we haven't seen them in a long time, and that the how are you is kind of like a can of worms almost, because maybe that is so a vulnerable question at the moment. So yeah, so I just appreciate you bringing awareness to even our little words of hellos, you know, and identifying different language and approaches.
And I think, you know, the fact of the matter is, like, this extends beyond grief as well. You know, we were just mentioning mm-hmm. earlier about, mm-hmm. you know, mental health is, it's like the next pandemic, in my humble opinion. You know, I think we came out of COVID and we're heading straight into the next pandemic, which is mental health. And, you know, sometimes asking someone who's really, really, really struggling, how are you? I think two things happen. Either we're becoming masters at putting on what I call the mask. I'm okay. Because it's the easiest answer, right? You don't have to get mm-hmm. into the things. It's just less messy. But then you get so good at saying, I'm okay, that you're not being honest, right? So it either goes that way or people just avoid you, right? Because, oh gosh, there's Lisa again. I don't want to have to tell my story again. So I'm just going to, you know, mute her on my phone, whatever. So I think that just being more sensitive to everybody right now is just so, so important.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I also feel like I've experienced grief my whole life. And so sometimes I say the I'm okay so that I don't have to, I don't know if this is the right word, a burden to someone's ears sometimes, because if it's always something that's being brought up in like every other conversation, it's like, I don't know if they want to hear this, you know? So I think sometimes for myself anyway, sometimes I'll just say I'm okay. And then when we get into a conversation, then if I feel like they have maybe the time or like the energy to maybe hear me a little bit, then I'll sort of express kind of what I'm feeling at the moment. You know what I mean? I'm
Absolutely.
also aware of the other person as well.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the human condition, right? We're a lot of us are very sensitive to the other person. Like you say, you run into someone in the grocery store. You know, is that the place that we really want to get into the details? No, that's, I mean, everybody can do what they want, but myself, I feel like that's the place for the 30-second answer or the 20-second answer. Well, you know, I'm doing as best as I can, or, you know, today's an okay day, or, you know, just that superficial answer. Because you're right. I mean, I don't want to stand there for 3 hours now giving them the full breakdown of, you know, my mental status. And probably they don't want to either. If they're in the grocery store, they're there to get in, get out. But, and this is a terrific reason, another reason why I do believe that support groups, therapy, and all these things are great. They are there for this specific reason and these exact conversations. Should we be able to share our deepest, darkest, saddest things with our loved ones and our friends? For sure. But when you walk into a room filled with compassionate people who are on the same journey as you, you know, you can jump right into it. Man, I've had a day, and everyone there knows exactly what you're talking about. There's no apology for tears. There's no apologies for inappropriate laughter. You know, like you're just all in the same space and you get it. And I remember not that long ago, I've probably had two or three therapists since my daughter died. And the one that I have now, the first time I met her a couple of years ago, I said to her, I know this is your job. I know I'm paying you, but thank you for creating this space that I could just say what I needed to say. And I think that there's so much value in being able to have those safe places. Because if we keep this stuff inside of us, it starts to rot. And it will destroy us if we don't manage it properly.
I absolutely agree. And to your point of resources, if someone is not interested in like seeking therapy, are there other ways you advise listeners to get help or support?
Absolutely. I mean, the women that I work with, I always say that it takes a team. You know, the supports that I provide, the group work that I provide is one piece of the pie. I think that we need to involve our family doctors. I think we need to, you know, I would really, really, really encourage anyone who's struggling with loss to see a therapist or a counselor. I would. I mean, if they're against that, that's their thing. That's okay. But I would say the next best thing is to find a group of people going through exactly what you're going through. You know, I went to general grief groups after my daughter died, and it was awful. It was awful because I felt like nobody understood my journey. And not to say that there's worse grief, there's better grief or anything like that, but at the time when I was feeling so broken and so alone, it was really hard to sit in a room with people who'd lost a spouse, which I'm sure would be awful. But then hearing, you know, that they've been a few years out, now they were starting to date, and I mean, You can replace a husband. You can, but you can't replace a child. You know, I could have 17 more and I would never have a Katie. So I would say find a group. You know, if it's grief, find a grief group specific to your kind of loss with people like you. So it might be a dad support group if you've lost a child, a mom support group, or, you know, if you've lost a parent or a, you know, a spouse or what have you, because otherwise you're going to feel really, really alone. And to really, really do the self-care, like honestly, getting fresh air every day, getting out of the house, going for a walk to the mailbox and back. Like these are all little things, but they do add up to helping you feel a little bit better.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think we underestimate those simple things, even if we haven't lost someone, just for our overall health. And it's okay to not do anything either. Like, yep. You know, to boredom is one of those things that are also good for you, and just sitting with yourself and reading a book or just walking. So yeah, and then also like time, I think. Even though it doesn't heal all wounds, I think it does help. It helps. And for like reflection and like processing, you know, come to terms with how we perceive things now and how they've changed. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the things that you do to help Katie's memory stay alive? I know that you included Kay in your email and website for her memory. What other things or other ways do you keep her memory alive, and what other ways can you share that may be helpful in, you know, keeping those or honoring those memories?
It's interesting that you ask that. In my book, actually, I have an entire chapter on honoring your child. To me, that's a big piece of the journey. I know some people absolutely hate the word healing. I do use the word healing just as a verb, right? It's an action word that means that I am currently using it. I don't think we'll ever be healed. I mean, I've got a big wound in my heart and the scab is immense and it gets ripped off from time to time. But honoring is a big part of it. And I think, you know, regardless of your loved one, we probably don't even have enough time for me to list off all of my Katie projects that I've had over the years. But just to name a few, we always celebrate her birthday. I mean, that was always a fantastic day. Of course, it looks different now, but she always gets a cake and we always do a fun thing that she would do on her birthday. We always mark her anniversary day. I will never say I celebrate that day. It's not a fun day, but my husband and I, now that we're getting closer to retirement, we've started traveling on and around her angel anniversary, and we'll go to a spot and that she either has been or that she loved, and we'll do something fun in her memory. Even little things like I'll go to Starbucks, and when they ask for my name, I'll always give them Katie's name so that I hear her name, right? After she died, I worked very closely with her high school to establish a memorial scholarship. So I was at the school a lot, and they were getting close to graduation. And just in conversation with the guidance department, I discovered that, and of course, it makes sense when I say this, but there were a number of girls at the high school whose family could not afford the fancy dress, the hair, the makeup, the shoes, like all the things that go into these fancy proms and grads. So I thought, well, I know people. Literally picked up my phone, put a Facebook post up, you know, hey guys, does anybody have or know of anybody who has a gently used grad dress, you know, that's current, that's in style, any size, any color, I will pick them up. And within 3 days, I had 35 grad dresses that we were able to donate to the school. And now there's something called Katie's Closet at the school. It's private. It's actually a side room off of the guidance room. So nobody has to know that you're going in there to get your grad dress. I've helped people at Christmas time. You know, I don't get to buy my daughter a Christmas present anymore. So the universe, or Katie, I don't know who helps me, but inevitably somebody comes into my path that just needs a little extra help. I've helped a young man with the cost of his university books for the next semester. And I gave him a gift card to the bookstore here for $200. And he got tears in his eyes and he said, "Do you know that this is the exact amount that I needed this semester? And I didn't know how I was going to afford it." What else? We helped a young woman to pay for her exam fees for her. She was becoming a paramedic, really expensive exam fees. We helped her out with that. There's a memorial garden at her high school. Actually, I gently asked the school if they would call it a memory garden instead of memorial. I just thought it sounded more positive. She's got a tree there and a bench there. We give away a literary award at the elementary school where she went. You know, the sky is the limit. Like I say, I could take up a full hour telling you about all these things, but I think it really comes down to, you know, what did your child, what did your person really love? How can you help other people in their memory? I know a mom, she has business, like, they look like business cards. They're not business cards, but on the front, she's got a beautiful photo of her son, his name. And on the back, it's like random acts of kindness and it's a pay it forward kind of a thing. So if she's in line at the coffee, you know, at Starbucks or wherever, she might buy somebody a coffee, you know, behind her and then give them this card. And she says, you know, the deal is that you have to keep this going because this is what Matt would like. You know, we have sent balloons. I don't recommend this now because I learned how bad it was for the environment. But, you know, we release butterflies. There's places that you can get individually packaged butterflies and release them. You can release ladybugs. You can, you know, it just so many things. And I find it so helpful for my heart to do things for that. And it just lends its way also into another segue for me to say my daughter's name to make sure that her memory and that she will never be forgotten.
Wow, I really love all the things that you've done to help you, you know, also deal with your loss, but also give back at the same time. I it's very admirable, and I wish a lot of more people would do that. Yeah, it gives people ideas of what they could do. To conclude, I'll have this one last question. Do you have any goals or aspirations as you continue your speaking journey, your podcast, and your mission with helping other parents?
You know, I think grief is a journey. I think life is a journey. And I've just kind of gotten to the point where I just let things unfold as they will. I do believe that my daughter is in spirit and that she walks beside me and kind of gives me a push in the direction I'm meant to go in. But really speaking on the large stage seems to be the next thing. I find it just so interesting that people want to hear my story, but I am starting to share it, you know, at mental health events and even just, you know, to give people hope, even if they aren't coping with my loss, that, you know, everybody in this life struggles at some point. You know, I don't know a single person. I'm going to be 55 in 2 months, and I don't know a single person whose entire life is rainbows and unicorns and sitting on the beach and eating chocolate cupcakes. And, you know, we all have really hard things in our life at some point. We all go through tough seasons. And if I can give anybody some hope, then that is kind of my big wish, is that I can give this world some hope.
Thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey with us, Lisa. I appreciate you being here on the podcast with me. And if anyone is interested in listening to Lisa's podcast, I will have it in the show notes. And also, can people reach out to you, Lisa, on Instagram or your website?
Absolutely. I would say if someone is struggling with the loss of a child, I have so many resources on my website. Yeah. Easiest way to find it, because my name is kind of tough to spell, is go to griefsupportformoms.com. And actually, that's the best way to find me on Instagram as well. If you're a grieving mother, is Grief Support for Moms.
All right. And thank you all for listening, and I will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. All the resources and contact information will be located in today's show notes. Also, as a reminder, I release episodes every other Friday. Thank you again, and I will see you next time.